Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. I'm your host, Notch Karnick, and with me wearing our life support belts are...
Bill Boywad.
Emily Bowen Marler.
And Rudy Kusbaker.
So this is the second installment in our pilot series, where we're reviewing chronologically each pilot for each Star Trek series. And this is the second week, we're doing the best pilot from the best series, the animated series. So we'll be reviewing the pilot from the animated series Beyond the Farthest Star.
And while you're at it, follow us on social media at Strange New Takes on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you know, you should tell your friends about this podcast because it's so much fun for you to listen to. We want more people to join you.
Yep. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Your rating will help us appear higher on search lists, and that's how people find us. So do help us out.
And remember, we're obviously going to spoil this episode during this podcast. I mean, that's kind of what we do when we recap episodes. So if you haven't watched this this episode from 1973, make sure to do so before you listen to our episode. Trust me, usually we say like, if you don't want to, don't do that. But this week you should. Like, get your bell bottoms, get those mutton chops on your face, and get groovy with Beyond the Farthest Star. The episode summary of this episode on Memory Alpha was single line. Kirk's crew comes across an ancient derelict vessel, but something is still living inside it. Very brief for the summary for the animated series pilot there. I don't really think I need to go into much more detail at this point. Maybe I should. Okay, like Bill called, what'd you call the alien that they encountered?
I don't know. What did I call it?
You called it, I think, a sentient fart. And that's pretty much it. The crew of the Enterprise find this derelict vessel. Someone farted in it 300 million years ago. That fart then makes it over to the Enterprise, takes over all its computer systems, and our crew has to, like, save the ship. And they do that by threatening to ram it into a dead sun. And the alien decides, no, I don't want to smash into a sun. So it leaves the ship, and then the crew go off on their animated way.
That's literally what happens.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
Notch isn't minutes. Riffing at all. That's like the plot. That's what happened in the episode.
Okay. All right. So your strange new takes, please.
Well, as we were preparing to record, I found myself wondering what it is that goes through Notch's head as he is, you know, those first few more moments before he starts, because I know something is going through his head. But yes, anyway, so that's my strange new take is what's in Notch's head.
That's a great name for a Star Trek episode.
Hey, there you go. And my strange new take for this episode is, I knew that they used the same music for every single episode in the animated series, but I didn't realize they just use the same music on loop for the entire episode itself. It was too late in the episode and I didn't feel like rewatching it, but I was like, I should have counted how many times this little riff happens and how many times this little riff happens, because there's basically three pieces of music that they use over and over and over and over again.
Okay, my strange new take is octopi are awesome. You guys should all get into octopi. They have three hearts and like kind of somewhat independently sentient arms, and it's like they're like basically like aliens. So definitely check out the Wikipedia on octopi. I don't know. I mean, this, I don't know what to say about this episode. It's kind of ridiculous. It's moved super fast. I would just point out that apparently in the 10 years that have passed since season 3 of the original series, Scotty and Dr. McCoy have been working out a lot because they're ripped in the animated series. Like, what happened to Scotty, dude?
I mean, it's basically, you know, that scene where they're running to like engineering or whatever, and you can see their like arms and legs moving really fast, but they're moving really slowly. When you do that a lot, I mean, there's a lot of exercise, you know. That's, you get how, real, yeah, ripped.
Just running in place. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good strange new take, but I'm gonna move it out to next week, because I really like what Emily said about Notch, and it made me think that maybe it's like if y'all have seen Gone in 60 Seconds and Nicolas Cage is just about to go start stealing cars, but everybody's waiting, and he's like doing something with his hands, and I think Notch does the same thing. Like, he has to get his mind in place. So that's what I thought. The pilot, the series, I don't know, it was nice for me. It was quick, fast, kind of made me felt like I was watching a Fantastic Four episode. The production value there, but it was quick.
It reminded me of Johnny Quest, the original series of Johnny Quest. Yeah. But I'm really not thinking about anything. I'm just trying to like, I'm mostly trying to create the like, hello, welcome to, you know, like voice in my head. So I don't go, hello, and welcome to Strange New Takes.
Dude, I, Notch, sorry to interrupt. That's exactly what the monster sounded like when he took over the ship. Oh, I thought he was going to be scary. He has such a nerd voice. It was not intimidating at all. I would.
Especially at the end, he's like, hello.
Yeah.
Don't leave me.
All right. Well, I was going to say some stuff about lawn care, but I'll leave that for next week. Let's just say about this episode. I was expecting, like, you know, this episode to be broadcast. You know, I mentioned the bell bottoms and the mutton chops, but then, you know, on stage, there's the band with the, like, each person behind their little station. The guy comes out, like, you know, girl Frankie comes out with the metal microphone and starts doing, like, you know, like, lounge tunes. After the episode is done, like that's it was very groovy, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, this is a 70s, like uber 70s feel. And Emily, the music, it just never stopped. It just never stopped. Oh my God. It's so obvious. But anyway, we should jump into discussing this episode in some depth. And we can take the same format we took last week, which is, I think the first thing we can tackle is the story and writing. Did we actually enjoy what we watched as viewers?
Yeah, I'll go ahead since I already went out on a limb and said I liked the fast-paced nature of it and gave that feel of watching a really old comic animated. I don't know. I like the techno babble, right? It was grounded in a little bit of reality, right? Spock mentions absolute zero temperature. Uhura talks about right ascension off the galactic plane. I had to look that up. I don't know if that exists, but it's like a way to navigate the stars or something like that. So cool stuff like that. And I like the design of the alien ship. So throughout the episode, I got the sense that while it was a little comical, I agree, you never quite knew what was going to happen next, right? So that true feeling of, you know, going where no one's gone before, you know, quote unquote, beyond the farthest star, like, oh, there's a star and we're getting pulled into it. And oh, we're in orbit. Wait, there's another signal. Whoa, there's an alien ship and we're on that alien ship and it's, abandoned. So I like that part. Again, it's animated, so you can take some liberties there. What do you guys think?
I thought it was funny. Oh,
go ahead, Emily.
Well, I was going to say that. So at the beginning, when he talks about what their mission is, you know, they're star charting. And then I started thinking, I don't know if you all have ever heard that song, Star Trekking Across the Universe. Anyway, so I started changing the lyrics to Star Charting Across the Universe. It just seemed funny. I don't know why the star charting made me kind of laugh, but it did. It just seemed so mundane. Like, here's our mission, we're star charting. But they did have something exciting happen while they were star charting. So, you know, there's that. And I thought it was pretty cool that they were talking about having the, that it was 300 million years in orbit. Mm. And, you know, so that kind of stuff was cool too, kind of placing it as a, clearly it would have been created by a species that, far surpassed the technological capabilities of humanity. But I also, as I was watching it, I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is a creature, not a ship. Like, I kept thinking, because that's how we've had different creatures on, like, well, especially on Next Generation, that have kind of had that look a little bit. And so it looked to me like a creature, and then like pods or something that the, you know, alien gave birth out of or something. I don't know. That's kind of what I was thinking. So then when it ended up really being a ship, I was like, oh, I guess I was wrong. And I've seen this before, but I didn't remember because really only one or two animated series episodes have stuck with me.
But. Yeah, it was just a comment on the scale of both the age of the ship and the size of the ship. This was like, I feel like it's the opening act to like a novel, like a sci-fi novel series. Like, I've read it, like Leviathan Wakes from the The Expanse, a bunch of other like sci-fi series. Like, this is where it opens. Like, we found a ship. It's really old, and you know, we're like far away from everybody else, this is how like a bigger plot starts.
Yeah, I really appreciated the ancientness of the ship. I think this is something that sci-fi writers get wrong a lot, is the scale in all senses of the word, but including in time. Mm. And I don't want to get us distracted here, but, you know, I think it's quite likely that there actually are like no aliens anywhere. And if we were at some point to stumble on alien civilization, it would probably be a long dead one. So that, I mean, I like that detail.
Isn't there a like sci-fi series of like TV show or something? I think Rudy, you had told me about this many years ago, where like humanity finally makes it into the stars and they find nothing, and then everyone's like super sad about that.
That's pretty much Firefly, isn't it?
Isn't that,
because Firefly doesn't have any? I mean, that's not the point of Firefly, but Firefly doesn't have any alien beings. It's just humans, isn't it?
Yeah, Firefly is, I think it's localized to a system, right? There's like a really complex star system. Humanity's migrated there, like from Earth. But yeah, there's nothing outside. Isn't Ad Astra like that, right? Where, you know, it's...
Oh man, that movie. Oh
my God. It is desolate. But what I found interesting here, going back to Bill's point, was it felt like... if anyone of you has read the Rama series by Arthur C. Clarke, where you know, there's like this alien vessel that happens to come into the solar system, and humanity's still not, you know, figured out a way to travel beyond the solar system. They're just barely going across planets, and they manage to hop in, and it's like this ancient, you know, enclosure with weird climates, and I don't want to spoil it, but it was very similar. It was much faster, but I think the Rama series are actually the inspiration for that circular habitat ship that we see in Interstellar at the end. That's pretty much what Rama looks like. But yeah, I got that sense. I like that part. It was, again, very quick, but I like that part.
Yeah.
And they had the moment where Dr. McCoy, I think, commented on what you said, Bill, when he said, well, I think it was Dr. McCoy, like, that's just a blink of an eye in the whole span of, you know, so it's kind of like McCoy was reminding the rest of the crew, like, yeah, that really shouldn't be that strange that we're finding an alien race that was around 300 million years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It was a nice detail. So it won some points for me for that. It lost some points when they, when I think it's Dr. McCoy again, he's like, oh, we can't break out of orbit because the gravity is so strong.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, do you know what an orbit is? Like, you know, like, anyway. But yeah, I mean, getting back to the writing, again, it's like so fast paced compared to a live action Star Trek show. And it seemed to me that these were just scripts that could have been written for TOS, right? That they just compressed down to 20 minutes or whatever. So it has a totally different feel. It's hard for me to say if that was like bad or good. Rudy, it sounds like you enjoyed that.
Well, it could have been longer, but then if it was longer, I think I would have started to laugh some more. So it was, yeah. It was good in that sense. I also got a sense of that, you know, there's nothing here, but there could be something here. There's, you know, signs of devastation and all of that. So again, I'm taking a leap here, but a little bit of the Alien series anxiety of coming in somewhere and not knowing. It is dumbed down and made comical because of the 70s animation side of it. But I don't know.
I think the other thing that the base kind of messed up for me is that we didn't get as much of the like dead alien species. Like you can imagine if they'd built a set or whatever and they were there, there'd be a little bit more fascination with like looking at the ancient ship and like exploring it a little bit more. And I thought that was in a way that was the most interesting part of the episode, and having maybe 10 more minutes of that would have given me before the climax would have given me some like happiness rather than getting straight back to the ship and then suddenly like this little bulb in the bridge is shooting everybody, which I mean it's fine, it wasn't bad, so I'm not going to say that, but like it was a more like by the book kind of dull. You knew that our friends were gonna win, like they were not, I mean this wasn't the end, let's put it that way, the pilot. And so there was no sense of like something horrible can happen, whereas I think when they were on the alien ship there was a sense of possibilities, like I didn't know what was gonna happen next, and if they had more of that I'd be happier.
Critique I have of the writing is that, you know, Spock is supposed to be like really smart, right? But it seemed like throughout the whole episode, Spock, like everybody else was a moron, and Spock was just of like average intelligence and just pointing out all these things that are totally evident to the audience, right? Like Scotty says something really dumb and Mr. Spock is just like says the common sense thing and everybody's like, wow, what an insightful guy. Maybe it's supposed to make the listener feel smart. I don't know.
Did Spock like laser a door opener to open the door? Was there like a reason to do that? I missed that. I just saw him lasering the door opener and the door opened. I wondered if there was a reason behind it or.
Was it that one that went to the bridge?
Yeah. No, that it's because Scotty was stuck in some, like the monster was trying to kill Scotty basically, and they needed he and Scotty was like getting pinched under this big metal door and. They needed to cut him loose.
Bill, I think you touched on another thing. There's not a lot of character development in this episode at all. Or character building, which they didn't need because the characters are fully fleshed out from the previous show.
Well, you know, they really made Kirk a control freak in this, though. Because there's a scene when they get beamed back to the ship. And, you know, he's trying, the alien came back with us, beam it away. And then Kirk runs over to the, you know, to the console, pushes the guy out of the way and tries to do it himself. And I'm like, if you weren't such a control freak, maybe that guy could have beamed it out before it had a chance to infiltrate the ship.
And then it infiltrates the ship in like five different ways. It like goes in through the air exhaust, it goes through the door. And yeah, that was funny.
So, let's move on to talking about characters. I don't think there's going to be a lot here To be honest, maybe we could talk a little bit about the fact that all of the secondary characters, like all of them, are played by James Doohan, and like including the guy that Kirk pushes away. It's Lieutenant Kyle, who's been played by a different actor in the original series, and will show up on the bridge of the USS Reliant in The Wrath of Khan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but he's played by James Doohan in this. Voiced, rather, I should say. And the Obey Me alien is also James Doohan.
That's funny. Now I have to listen again.
It's throughout the series, basically. Apparently, James Doohan did a ton of secondary characters.
Well, and I think Nichelle Nichols and Majel Barrett did a bunch of the women's voices, too. So,
yes.
Saving money.
And where was Chekhov?
Chekhov wrote an episode.
Yeah, so he wrote an episode, but he wasn't in it. I don't know. They're trying to save money, I guess. They figured he was the one they could sacrifice.
We have a budget for one accent, okay?
They wanted to give that guy with the three arms, you know, so.
Who is played by James Doohan. Which, that's the other thing. Arik shows up in this episode, but is, you know, he's at the helm. And it's just like, oh, yeah, we have the first non-human characters, bridge officers in Star Trek. Non-bipedal. He's three legs, right? So he's tripedal.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So basically the first, like, non-human with stuff on their face, okay? Let's go with that.
Non-humanoid.
Aliens, yeah. In Star Trek on the bridge. And Arik has, like, no lines through this whole thing. So, and Maress, who's the, like, cat-like Cation, she doesn't show up in this episode at all. And neither does Nurse Chapel, who is in later episodes of the original series. So there's a lot, like, character-wise that doesn't happen here almost. And I was actually surprised that for a pilot they had so little character development.
Well, and I feel like they do more later. They have more character development later in the series. And especially, so the best original or the best animated series episode is the next one, Yesteryear. It's actually, like, a good episode, I think, as far as, like, just in the whole of Star Trek. And that definitely does some character development, and it's more interesting. And
Okay. Well, the character development was the buffness.
That's right. They were physically developed.
Captain, we've, between the two shows, we've built a gym. We've all been using it a lot.
Well, hey, they use the gym a lot on Enterprise, so, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Except all of the, they didn't have any weights, just like gel that they, like, rubbed on each other. Okay. All right. Okay. So there's not much to discuss character wise, I don't think. So let's move on to, let's take a break. Last week we didn't take a break and I had to, like, mash one in post-production. So let's do that here so I can throw in some sort of excerpt or something in during the break.
Captain's log, stardate 5221.3. On outward course beyond the fringe of our galaxy towards Questar M17, a source of mysterious radio emissions. Mission, star charting. Situation, Mr. Scott?
We've picked up speed, sir, rapidly. I've cut back power, but we continue to gain momentum.
Mr. Sulu? She's not answering the helm, sir. 2 minutes right ascension off course and drifting farther, Captain.
Stand by to reverse course.
Standing by, sir.
Reverse course.
Welcome back to Strange New Takes. We're talking about Beyond the Farthest Star, the absolutely well-known pilot of the animated series that all of us 100% knew was the pilot when we ended last week's episode, as you'll recall. So, and much like that episode, we're running a little fast this week. So let's see what I can do to slow us down. Maybe play some, like, like groovy music in the background. Keep us going. So, okay, let's talk about production, and we have to talk about that music. We've discussed it a little bit already. And I feel like, Emily, you and Adam, when we had referenced the original series, or the animated series, many, many episodes ago, had been like, yeah, when we get there, the music is going to suck.
And it's so bad.
Here we are.
Oh my gosh. I remember I fell asleep one time when I was watching the animated series, and I don't know how many episodes happened, but I thought it was just one episode because of the music. Like, if you're not paying attention. And I realized like 3 or 4 episodes had happened while I was asleep on the couch, but it just they all had the exact same music. It's, you can't watch more than 2 episodes a day because of it. It's bad.
Yeah, and it's constant and it's audible. Like, I feel like sometimes the background music, and I mean, this is the difference also between American TV and TV from a lot of other parts of the world. Not all. Some, like Indian TV, have like even more egregious music and ridiculous stuff. But like, say British TV, for example, just generally tends to be quieter, so there's not a lot of audible music. But even going beyond that, American TV that has a lot of music, usually it's just like a little bit twinkling in the background or something that, you know, you don't sit there and be like, this is happening. Like, this music exists. Why have I put on my bell bottoms? Like, this is like subliminal, like suggestive stuff from the music. And that's what I felt in the animated series. Like, it's a constant. It's loud. I cannot tune it out. Multiple times during the episode, I had to stop and take note that it existed, which I think is not good. I feel like a lot of our criticisms of Star Trek sometimes are a little nitpicky. I don't think this one is.
Well, you know, so I love movie scores. Like, I've long, you know, and there are certain composers that I really like, and I'll come out of a movie and want to go buy the soundtrack or buy, you know, like, that's, I love movie music. And so many people in my life don't even, like, I'll walk out, I'll be like, oh my gosh, that music was just incredible. And they're like, oh, I didn't even notice. And I've heard people say that that's the sign of a good movie composers, you don't notice the music. But as a musician, I think I take offense at that. You know, like, I want people to notice my music, but it needs to support what's happening and not pull focus from what's happening. So, you know, it's got to carry you along on the ride. And maybe there wasn't a whole lot to carry us emotionally in this episode. And so they wanted to have the music spark some emotional response. I don't know.
There's actually, I mean, to this point that you're making about recognizability, I think that there's a great YouTube video. And I like, honestly, all of you, but even you listener, just go and watch every video on this channel. It's called Every Frame a Painting, where a guy who's a film editor actually has all this, like, deep dive into, like, cinematic techniques of great directors and a few other, like, things that you will notice. For example, one of his videos is fantastic about how he talks about his home city of Vancouver and how it never plays itself in a movie, and it is hilarious. So I recommend watching that channel in general. But he's got one on the music from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and why it sucks. And I mean, he made this episode, this video many years ago, so it's been, maybe things have changed since then. But he has this whole deep dive into how what music sounds scores are supposed to do and why Marvel's just don't meet that mark for him. I if I remembered what he said, I would share it right now, but it's much better. But it's called Every Frame a Painting, and I strongly recommend going and checking out his video on the Marvel Symphonic Universe in particular. So,
you know, Vancouver is also a very popular spot for science fiction. You know, it's like Battlestar Galactica. Every planet they go to just happens to look like British Columbia.
Well, like, Star Trek, I think Discovery is filmed entirely in
Toronto.
In Toronto. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's in Toronto. Okay. Yeah. Which was the was that
Man Sci-Fi? In the High Castle?
I think so.
That was at least a season or two in Vancouver.
There's
BSG was Vancouver, I think.
It was, yeah.
What is that Canadian sci-fi show that shows up, that showed up on Netflix? It's 3 seasons long. The first season and a half are like amazing, and then it just like dives off a cliff, where a bunch of people just wake up on a ship with no memory of what's happened to them.
Dark Matter.
Yes, that's a Canadian show. I don't know if it's Vancouver, but y'all reminded me of its existence.
I like the intro music for that. Since we're speaking music.
It's not groovy enough, man. It's not groovy. All right. Well, go watch Dark Matter. It's very, very good, and then it's not. But let's keep moving about. So the music kind of grated on us. So how do we feel? We talked about this a little bit, but I wanted to ask you, how do y'all feel about the shorter runtime?
I thought it was a little bit too frenetic. I don't know. At first, I thought it was going to be about this weird, dead star they found, and then there's this weird ship in orbit, and it was never kind of clear to me how those two things were related. It would seem that they should be related somehow, but not clear to me. And then all of a sudden, they're back on the Enterprise, and it was just, yeah, I mean, if you look away for 30 seconds, you would be confused, you know, because it's just moving so quickly.
Exactly. I think I may have lost a couple of plot points as well, and they really hurry through stuff. Like, they get rid of that alien ship. It's like historical, ancient, 300 million years old. One phaser shot and it's gone.
That was strange, and I think maybe part of that was so they don't have to explore it in the next episode. Now it's gone. Bye. See ya.
So how long was the episode?
25 minutes.
Okay, so this would be comparable to Lower Decks. Because the most recent animated series I would have seen would have been Lower Decks, I actually thought this felt slow because as I was watching it, I was just I don't know. I just, and that's also kind of the way the original series was. You know, there are a lot of, they would take a long time to get into the, we talked about that with, The Guardian, City on the Edge of Forever, you know, it just took a really long time to get to the point of what the story was about. And this one didn't take a long time to get to the point, but since Lower Decks is that's frenetic. It's hard to pay attention to everything in Lower Decks. There's no way to catch it all. Whereas you could catch everything on this episode if you were paying it, if you're just watching and not distracted by other things.
Yeah, I think maybe I was working a little too much on my notes because I missed how the fart alien left the ship. I was like, what happened? There was some dialogue in between, and then the ship is speeding towards the planet, and then the alien leaves. I saw it all, but I was just like, I don't understand exactly how this
I don't think they told you.
Yeah, it also really confused me. As best I can tell, they went to warp and kind of warped through the planet.
They dematerialized.
It looked like
a suicide.
It looked like they cloaked or something.
Yeah, it had that wavy cloak kind of thing.
It was, very strange.
Then the fart became an atmosphere of the star. It was around the star, the dead star.
And it was communicating with the Enterprise somehow. And then, you have that moment where it's so lonely. It's just really sad and depressing. That was emotionally affecting. And then the next second it's happy music and the captain's log is starting. And it's just whoa, give me a second. Maybe there's a commercial break there. I don't know. But watching it the way I did, it was just whoa, let me process that this really sad, lonely alien is going to spend 300 million years alone again. Mm-hmm. And then start the captain's log and happy music. But yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. I think tonally, this is a little bit different, and maybe some of that is down to the music, but the tone of the show was also very, kind of, it was less serious.
Well, it was marketed as a kids' show, right?
Yeah. I have a question there for y'all. Do y'all think that the writers of LDS had a look at this and decided to go another way or use things from here? I mean, those are the only two animated, right? Until the Nickelodeon one that's coming up, right?
Well, we see someone from Eryx's species in Lower Decks, right?
And the Cations. We see the Cations too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the doctor.
Oh, of course. Yeah, right.
Tana.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that they obviously watched it. I don't know if they were really inspired by it aside from those, nods.
Yeah,
what does this do to animated Star Trek, right? Is it going to be a few seasons of Lower Decks and then we wait another 30 years for the next one? Or
Well, there's going to be Prodigy, this year.
We have one quick coming up, yeah.
But I think that will be more computer animated.
I do. There is part of me that wonders, what's going to happen in terms of all of these series coming out at the same time. Like, are we going to burn out and have a fallow period of no Star Trek again? Or whether this is going to, like, keep going. I mean, you look at Marvel, and they just keep going on and on and on and on. And there's more superhero movies every day, and now TV shows. Star Wars seems to be taking the same approach.
I mean, they definitely want to avoid franchise fatigue, right? I mean, they're aware of that, like CBS Paramount, and are trying to not do that. Whether they will successfully manage, I don't know. But I think, you know, they're going to be five shows airing, right? Yeah. So Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, Prodigy, and Strange New Worlds.
All in this year, I think. They're all supposed to come out this year, right?
I think it'll probably be until 2022, until a lot of the ones that are shooting right now are done with post-production. But and then it'll be, you know, there will maybe be no more than a month between shows. So the two won't be on at the same time, right? But there will almost always be Star Trek on. But they're also different, right? So that might help avoid the franchise fatigue issue.
So speaking of shows being on air, I did a quick read of the Memory Alpha pages on this episode and the animated series, and essentially what happened is that Star Trek got canceled in 69 and NBC had a new formula for its Nielsen ratings, I think in like 72 or so, and they put the old Star Trek data into the new formula and realized, holy crap, we were like, it was really popular among, like, it's the, apparently there was this like demographic they really wanted of, like, I think it was 18 to 45 year old males, and Star Trek was doing really well in syndication with that group as well, so it became this gigantic hit. And they realized that they'd like canceled their golden goose, so is the way it was portrayed, and so they decided, hey, let's get more Star Trek. And they realized that the sets had been destroyed, so it would be extraordinarily expensive to create them again. And that's how it ended up in an animated show. I didn't see anything about it being marketed as a kid show. There were some reviews that basically said this isn't a kid show. It's good for everybody. And so there was that. And so I don't know necessarily beyond that if there's a lot of depth about like how they put together the production that I can go into. The same guy who wrote Where No Man Has Gone Before wrote this, by the way, somehow did not include the extremely important let's hold all the women's hands during warp scene in this one.
Well, and I noticed the mini skirts are longer in the animated series, and at least they look longer when Uhura was sitting there. I was like, that skirt would definitely, because when Uhura sits, the skirt does not cover her bum. Like, you know, like, yeah, that's how short those dresses were.
So. We have to remember the animated series occurs in the space equivalent of the 70s. So, you know, that's everything's just getting longer and wider, including their chests. So, just kidding. But so there was some of that element of like, let's get the same pilot feel. And also they... Gene Roddenberry was firm that this is still Star Trek. It's not a different show. So the moniker, the animated series, didn't happen until years later. It was just Star Trek. So, really? Yeah, it's supposed to be just the same show, continued. But, yeah, it's... I need to watch more of it until I can have more of an opinion on the show itself. But what do y'all think about this as a pilot? Like, in terms of, like, introducing... I know Gene Roddenberry thought of it as the same show, but in terms of introducing a new series, like, if you hadn't watched Star Trek in syndication, perhaps, or maybe you'd watched it, like, casually, what would you think about this as a pilot?
Oh, terrible. If you hadn't seen Star Trek before?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, terrible. They just nothing jump right in, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you don't know anything about the characters. It goes a million miles an hour.
There was some intrigue in the first half, but the way they executed the, you know, we're calling it the fart alien taking over the ship, that was just crazy, right? So at the end of it, outside of Emily's recommendation to watch the next one, I don't think I would have, I mean, I'd go ahead and watch stuff, but wouldn't really be like, oh, this is something I really need to get into and binge watch.
You should also watch the episode that has the devil in it because it's kind of funny. Mm. So there's two episodes. So watch the next episode and then I need to figure out what it's called. But there's an episode that features the devil and it's pretty funny.
Why does God
something with magic
need a starship?
It's something that's I'm gonna look it up now so I can tell you, and people who haven't seen the animated series, people who have seen it are yelling it right now at our podcast because there are so many people listening to this podcast right now. They're like yelling from all across the world what the name of that episode is,
and they're yelling so lonely. Anyway, so I misquoted that, by the way. It's not, it's what does God need with a starship?
Oh,
that was the quote from the Final Frontier I was going with. But anyway,
this is totally off topic and fits for last week instead. But one of the things I noticed a change between the two pilots for the original series was they called it a spaceship, I think, in the first pilot, and they call it a starship in the second one, I think. Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Just like time warp factor.
Right.
I have something to say about last week, but I'll
the magics of one. The magics of Magus 2 is the other one you should watch.
Okay. The magics of Magus 2. It's like MMM666. Okay. All right. The uniforms in this were the same TOS uniforms. They didn't create a new set of uniforms for the series. And it's interesting because in the two pilots we watched last week, they were the same uniforms, but wasn't this set because they were wearing the uniforms that were created for the cage, which had the like turtleneck collar. So the women, they had the like ribbed collars for the guys that were the same yellow color. There's a set of the early promotional images of Star Trek, the original series, have Spock and Kirk in the new uniforms and Yeoman Rand. Why am I forgetting her name? Grace Lee Whitney.
Grace Lee Whitney, yeah.
Playing, wearing the old women's uniform from the cage. So this kind of like mismatched publicity photos, which is kind of interesting as well. But just getting back to the pilot thing. So I agree with you all. I think there's nothing to like hold on to and be like, I want to come back next week and continue watching this if you're not an existing Star Trek fan, which is kind of odd. Like there's nothing to like latch on to, I feel, you know? So.
Yeah.
I think animation-wise, what did y'all think of the visual quality of the show?
I mean, it's not that great.
Here's the running move. When they're going to run, they start like that. All of them go through the frame that way first.
Why don't you describe what you just did, Emily? Because our listeners, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They can't. They just put their arm kind of in front of their, you know, it's like, and the arm just stays there for a while as they start to run. It's like this weird little, I don't know, it's strange.
Antiquated appeal. I don't know. That's about it.
This show won the Daytime Emmy Award in the area of Best Children's Series for 74-75. Oh. It's the only Emmy Award that Star Trek has ever won.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. They should play that in the intro credits for every episode, maybe.
Right. What did y'all think about the sound quality of like the record voice acting and kind of getting that in there too?
I mean, I'll give an extremely layman's perspective. I had never watched this episode before. I didn't know it was a continuation of the original series. I didn't know there were going to be voiceovers. So just for me in the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, okay, this is what's going on here. And that was not nice. I don't know. That was the voices were familiar. I mean, that was the only familiar part and grounding there. So, I didn't think much beyond that. Like, I didn't find any issues as such. Like, you know, it was done all right, I think, for the time. What do you guys think?
And yeah, I mean, it sounded like Kirk and Spock and Uhura, and
wasn't a deep fake.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The dialogue is kind of stilted, right? It's just kind of people saying things to each other and then running in place. So I don't know if it's a voice acting issue or if it's a writing issue, but
it kind of made me think of, now you all have probably not seen this because first of all, you're younger than me. And yeah, anyway, there was a New Kids on the Block animated series in the 90s.
What?
And it reminded, the animation just reminded me. I was wondering if they were done by, even though the studios, it would have been 20 years apart. But yeah, so it just reminded me of that though. Like, but of course, you know, putting New Kids on the Block in an animated series, like, I don't know if they had to solve crime or I can't even remember what the point of the series was. But yeah, but I had to watch it because I liked New Kids on the Block. So
what are we going to go watch it? Podcast about Star Trek. Let's do a podcast about that.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's move on to talking about New Kids on the Block now. Like, let's end.
Who is your favorite Notch?
I've never watched that show, you know? Funny story.
Band member? Mine was Joey. I don't even know if there was a Joey. There probably was, though.
There was a Joey. Mine was Joey. He was my favorite. Yep.
Band member?
Yeah, New Kids on the Block was a boy band.
Oh.
It was like
Backstreet Boys before.
This is in the show with Topanga talking about, right?
No, that's Boy Meets World. Okay. I loved that show too.
I know all these things because, like, you know, I've been around folks who grew up in the 80s and 90s long enough that people reminisce and tell me all the names of these shows and characters. But like, I didn't watch any of them, so I don't know.
I had to watch Girl Meets World because I watched Boy Meets World. And so, you know, I had to watch the spinoff and I had to watch the spinoff of Full House and watch Fuller House. And, you know, I mean, they're totally the people in Hollywood. They're my people. They're like running Hollywood right now. My generation is.
But this is exactly what they were probably going for the animated series. They were just hoping like, oh, yeah, we've had this letter writing campaign happen. So like, yeah, that they'll go ahead and watch it because, you know. They'll know that it's the same series, and so maybe they didn't have to work quite as hard on making the pilot something that people had to like really get their teeth into. But maybe they succeeded yesteryear.
Well, it's obvious that they were just banking on the people who liked Star Trek to be watching. Like they were just going to take that for granted when they created it. So,
I also believe that this was one of the more expensive animated shows on air at the time. So it's not, again, they didn't skimp on that side of things. And I think, like, you know, the animated bridge, that first shot of like, maybe this is stuck with me because I've actually looked at a lot of screen caps from this and trying to produce our social media imagery. But that bridge shot is actually pretty neat. Like, I think the angle that they filmed from, I really liked it.
It's pretty funny the way they sit, though. I don't know if they did it this as much in this episode, but in other episodes, like they just have a strange way of sitting where they're like half lounging, half sitting, and it's like I don't even know how it doesn't look normal or comfortable at all the way they're in their stations. So,
yeah, there's also a lot of stillness. I feel like even for like an animated show of the time, I feel like there's they just stand still and like maybe only their mouths move for a second, or like nothing. Like there's just a lot of like still shots where there's no movement on screen whatsoever.
But there's music.
Does anyone else? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, but there's music in the background. Yeah. We're always playing.
Does it weird anyone else out that their eye color, that the whites of their eyes are the color of their skin? I find that so weird. I think that's like a shortcut for animation, but I thought it looked so weird.
Like it's just skin color through and through, except for the pupils.
Yeah, I mean that was that style of animation, right?
But yeah.
Yeah, it must just be more expedient for you know doing the animation to do it that way. But yeah, it's weird.
Well, and that was the reason I was thinking that they actually didn't continue the show for that long. Notch was because of what you said about the expense. It was a really expensive show to do.
They had, I think, what is it, 16 episodes of the first season, is it? And they had 6 in the second, I know that, yep. It's 22 episodes total. Just for listeners, this is questionable canon. For many, many, many years, it was not considered canon at all. However, as we mentioned before, Lower Decks and some of the more recent shows have started introducing elements from it into their to their stories, making it a little bit more settled. Yesteryear, the episode Emily was talking about, the next one, is one of the only episodes of the show that is conclusively considered canon in terms of the Star Trek universe as such. So it kind of has an interesting place. But I'm glad I've watched at least one episode. I think it makes me more likely to turn on the second episode when I'm bored and Plex and watch it happen.
They have a Tribbles episode. They have an episode with Mud. They have an episode, which I hate Harry Mud, so that doesn't compel me to watch it. But anyway, the Tribbles are pink, so that's kind of strange.
They have Kor, Koloth, and those like the Klingons named K. they show up again as well. And there's a whole, there's a whole big focus, I believe, on the Kashian species, right?
They have an episode.
The Kzinti. Show up a bunch. So we're not the Kashian. So anyway. Watch the animated series if you so wish, if y'all are so inclined. Maybe someday if we're struggling, if we have 22 weeks without any Star Trek coming up, we can recap the animated series in entirety.
21 weeks. Episodes at a time.
We could.
No, because you can't because of the music. You just can't. I'm telling you.
You'll go
insane.
There you go. Well, any final memorable moments that y'all want to talk about? I'll give another shout out to Obey me.
Well, the slow voice of the insectoid alien that they just speed up, right? That was funny for me.
Yeah, danger. Anyway, I'll tell you, the accidents seldom happen such systems, Dr. McCoy. I believe you must consider the alternative possibility that the crew of the ship destroyed her themselves. Dun, dun, dun!
How did he reach that conclusion, like, early on? Like, it made no sense to me, sorry, yeah. It was the right hypothesis, but because a ship had a bunch of holes in it, that they destroyed it themselves. I don't know.
Well, but it's that all of the pods were destroyed in exactly the same way, and they seemed to all be, it seemed to be like a systematic thing. That was his,
as opposed to an attack.
Yeah, because they could see that they were breached from the inside out.
What was interesting I found about it, the way they talk about it, like, I thought they're saying, oh, it must be this kind of ship. Oh, it looks like they destroyed it themselves. Oh, and they kept like telegraphing what the reality was, and then like, oh look, we were so right because we're so smart and we can get everything. So there was no mystery about anything because they basically said exactly what it was and then revealed, oh yeah, we were exactly right what we said before. So it's just weird.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our strange new ratings. Who wants to stick their neck out and give this episode a rating?
10 out of 10. best pilot, you guys. No, I don't know. 4 out of 10. I don't know.
Well, what's your final answer?
4 out of 10.
Okay. All right. 4 out of 10.
I will. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think Bill, that's your lowest rating you've ever given an episode on the show.
It is.
I will give it an even 5 out of 10. It was good for the first half. It wasn't so much for the second. Lord X has come a long way.
For sure. You know, I was trying to think. I gave yesterday, or the pilots from the original series, pretty low scores also. So I have to give it at least the same. So what did I give last week? Was it 2 out of 4?
2, yeah.
2 out of 5. Because, you know, I don't know that I would have watched the original series just based on the pilots. Anyway, so, I wouldn't feel compelled to watch the animated series based on this pilot either. So yeah, I'll do the same score that I did for the original series pilot.
2 out of 5. Yeah, this falls way below my rewatchability. It's not like offensive. And so I think I'm going to go with a 5 out of 10 as well. It doesn't go into the bad category for me, but it's not, no great shakes. And okay, so now for real, put on your ground mud brown colored clothes get into your muscle cars and put on the Sinatra. What are those things that happened in the 70s that I can reference? I don't know. Do all the 70s things and tell me, as NBC studio executives, what is your feedback based on this pilot? If you are trying to green light the series,
groovy music,
or would you even green light the series? Let's start there.
I probably wouldn't. And if I was going to give feedback, I would, you know, suggest that they like slow down the writing, make it a little bit more deliberate and easier to follow, develop the characters more, focus more on the characters. Or just make it a live action show and keep the scripts.
I would
agree.
We would stay silent in that room.
Gene is like waiting for us to say something. We're just like,
pretty much.
It's like, it's Star Trek, I guess. Yeah, I think my feedback to Mr. Roddenberry would be like, wow, cool visuals, like a lot of stuff happening on the screen. Give me some more character elements. Like, why should I care about our character? Something for the viewer to come back next week. But yeah, with like Bill, I'd be like, I need to see a second episode before I'm gonna green light this, buddy. So.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. Well, with that, if there's nothing else, thank you, Emily. Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Bill, for being here today. Always appreciate the chance to talk about Star Trek with you.
Thanks, Nach.
Yep.
Of course. And next week, we'll be talking about the pilot to The Next Generation, Encounter at Farpoint. Okay, Adam's not here to like disagree and be like, you forgot this other show that happened, you dumb fuck. But anyway, I think he said it nicer than that. But still.
Adam has a great reenactment of the saucer separation scene in Encounter at Farpoint, but unfortunately, it wouldn't translate to podcast. But maybe he could do it for us before we record.
There you go. I mean, we have social media channels; we can put up a video.
Wow, I'm looking forward to this.
Well, and yeah, Adam, Dinah, and Max are not here today, of course. I always like to thank the folks who aren't here, because without them, we wouldn't have this podcast. So thank you, Max, Dinah, and Adam as well, whatever y'all are doing. Thank you, listener, for listening to us, making this worth our time to put together this episode. Let us know via our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram if you have feelings on anything that we've shared. Thank you, Jishnu Guha, who recorded our theme music. We always appreciate the fact that we get to listen to that little Klingon theme strumming away on the guitar. And that special thanks to the Bridge Defense System. If it didn't exist, this episode would not be possible, because there's like literally no other way that the alien could compel the characters to be like to obey them. So I'm glad that it existed. It never shows up again outside of the animated series, so but yeah, special thanks to the Bridge Defense System. Okay, everybody, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.